Welcome to the regular board meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District.
The board did meet in closed session, and we discussed, we actually had a conference with our labor negotiator, and we discussed negotiations with our agency designated representative, Dr. Eisenrath Rogers. Is there any discussion? Any discussion from the public? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. The special board meeting of November 7th.
I'll move the approval of the minutes of November 7th.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mrs. Roger for the meeting of November 7th. Is there any discussion from the public? Any discussion from board members? Mr. Quisenberry is going to be abstaining because he was absent from that meeting. Then I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? We have 6 ayes, no noes, and 1 abstention. At the time of the preparation of the agenda, there was no correspondence received by the board. However, we did receive an email from Dr. Iraj Mansouri, and then it also looks like we might have received some. Okay, and we did receive. Thank you. We did receive something from, it looks like, Kitty Greenlaw regarding the adults with disabilities, and then also, it looks like there are another couple of things here that are at my seat, which I have not opened yet, so I'm not going to report those. Let's move on to public comment. Is there any? Well, I actually see several people who'd like to address the board. Mrs. Sheffer.
First, we have Janet Gould to speak about La Posada.
Good evening, Janet Gould, principal of Del Mar Elementary. I'd like to invite you all back to where you are this evening at Del Mar Elementary for our annual La Posada celebration, which is on Thursday, December 8th at 6 o'clock. It'll be an evening of great potluck dinner, cultural dancing, music, and the famous piñata. So we hope that you can all join us here on Thursday, December 8th at 6 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think almost everybody here has been to La Posada and would testify to the fact that it's just a great event and really a wonderful way that Del Mar brings its community together. So thank you, Mrs. Gould. Tickets are free, as a matter of fact. And actually, the community provides food. It's kind of like a giant Morro Bay community potluck with entertainment and all kinds of neat stuff. So, yeah, great stuff. Okay.
Next is Tristan Brown to speak about the Morro Bay High School Band Program.
Hi, my name is Tristan Brown. I'm a sophomore at Morro Bay High School. I play clarinet in the concert band and tenor sax in the jazz band. Well, my parents are always telling me how fortunate I am to be a part of such great bands. Whatever. I do know one thing, that I'm very fortunate to have the best band director in the area, Mr. Bellier. I'm sure I speak for all my fellow musicians in concert band and jazz band when I say I enjoy those programs very much. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you very much. And just so that you know, my son went through the 4 years at Morro Bay High School with Mr. Bellier, and I think he would agree with you that Mr. Bellier really made a difference for him.
Yes.
So, hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Next is Amy Beasley to speak about the music budget.
Hi there. My name is Amy Beasley, and my daughter attends Los Osos Middle School. She's been in the band she's actually been taught by Mrs. Galvan and Mr. Bellier. She started playing clarinet in fourth grade, and she now plays alto sax, and she's in seventh grade, but being taught by Mr. Bellier. I'm just here in support of my daughter and the other parents who are helping with the music boosters and funding the program for transportation and other things that both choir and the band need. But I'm here today to ask you guys for the same support that the parents are providing. We're hoping for a line item on that budget. We want to be on the budget. We want to be considered for transportation and other things. I have a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I hope that they're involved in music as well, just as well as sports and the other things, academics, sports, and to grow in music as well. So I'm hoping that's still there when they're in further in elementary and middle school. Thank you.
Always seem to be given high priority by administration. In a 2008 study by the University of Kansas, jumps of 22% in English scores and 20% in math scores were found in elementary schools with superior music education. Truly, music education should thrive in and of itself. And hopefully one day music will be given the priority it well deserves. Right now, we need money to help with the purchase of music, instruments, repairs, transportation, performance attire, and venue costs. The Booster Program works tirelessly in fundraising efforts, and as do our band and our choir teachers. It's time for the district to stand up and support this program. Music helps to keep kids in school. It helps keep kids involved and connected. Music teaches professionalism, manners, and gives students pride in themselves. Music teaches competition and provides students with pride in representing their schools. Music touches students, helps them connect with one another, and is inclusive of all students regardless of their abilities. And I'm just going to share with you this one story. It's in 1997. Our daughter was in seventh grade, and both of our children stayed in music through seventh grade and then went on to athletics in high school. But we were at the winter concert at the Performing Arts Center. And Mrs. Martin, who was the choir director for the middle school at the time, the middle school had their signature song that they sang. And she turned around to the audience and said, "I know we have a lot of relatives here visiting for the holidays and friends out there who have been through the music program, and I invite anybody who wants to up on this stage to sing our signature song." And the audience nearly emptied. It was amazing. I'm sure that, you know, we violated fire code on the stage of the Performing Arts Center. And it was such a... I have to stop?
Okay. If you could just wrap up.
I will stop and wrap up. But it was such a visual, and I really encourage you to keep that in mind as you consider funding for the schools. It touches us all.
Thank you, Mrs. Wacker.
Next is Dr. Iraj Mansouri. Let's speak about facility use fees.
Good evening, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ira Mansouri. I'm a retired clinical psychologist. I retired in 2005. Last year, I began teaching Farsi language in San Luis Obispo. To do so, I rented a classroom in Laguna Middle School where I teach my students. My students are 4 youngsters who are students of the district and 4 adults who are the parents of those students in the young level class. The business that I started is a factitious business. It's a for-profit, although I am not pocketing any benefit from it. I charge a small amount of money as tuition for each student that covers the liability insurance, reading materials, rental fees, and also paying to an aide that comes every other week to work with 2 younger students in the young student class. So the tuition that I came up with and everybody agreed was based on a initial rental fee. Later on, the district increased the rate more than double. So I submitted a request to you before through the email. And thank you, Kim, to distributing it to these ladies and gentlemen. I am requesting this issue be placed on the next board agenda as an agenda item.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Mansour, what you're asking for is that the board review the rental rates that you're paying? Is that
yes.
correct? Yes. Okay.
May I add one more sentence?
Yeah, you have a few more.
I established this school in 1985 in Sacramento, and since then it's been in operation. My sister, who is a seasoned teacher and administrator, has been running it. Last year, San Bono School District increased the fees as well, but based on the request that FLLC, the school, made.
Administrator Brian Goetz, it is not only greatly appreciated by him, but by the entire school community. all schools have field excursions. I wanted to present this information for our field excursions, which I believe are somewhat more eclectic at times and involved. And I thought for your information, so you can see what goes on in our little school, I wanted to present this, and I'll hand this out to you. In addition to that, we have a long-standing elective course program. There are two elective courses, programs, one in the fall, one in the spring. They run for 6 weeks. They're one-hour durations. They are instructed by professionals in the fields, some of which are parents, some community members, some outside the community members who volunteer their time. And I have a list of those electives for the fall. The spring have not been completed yet, but they include things like karate, hiking, Zing, which is an interpretive sculpture program, photography, watercolor, sculpture, video, cooking, ceramics, sketching, board games, bookmaking, yearbook, dance, cosmetology, and tennis. The students choose two of these electives. They have been very successful, and I believe that these are a couple of the things that we are trying to do for our community of students to help to enrich them as best we can within their educational standards. So I'll just hand this out, and once again, I want to thank you all very, very much for everything you do for us.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Labad. Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board during public comment? Okay, seeing no one, I'm going to close public comment. We would ordinarily go to reports by our student representatives, but I see that we have none here this evening. You're a little old to be a student there, Mark. Let's we'll go on to superintendent's updates. Dr. Prater.
I got it. Hi, welcome, and we're going just going to revisit the same issue we visited for the last three or four board meetings, and that is the issue of the triggers in terms of the financial condition of the state of California, and the remembering that the state's fiscal year begins on July 1st, and so we've had July, August, September, now October results are in. And the October results reflect a $608 million below budgeted level shortfall in revenues, with personal income tax leading the greatest shortage. The other two main revenue sources for the state are sales tax. They were down 2.2%, and corporation taxes were down 5.4%. Ultimately, the four-month total of shortages in revenues is $1.275 billion below the budgeted level through October, is a shortfall of 5.1%. What that means is that the state is not likely to meet its forecasted revenues on which its budget was constructed. And so there will be likely mid-year cuts that the state of California will impose on education. The latest number being discussed is about $260 per student in each district. It's going to be a $1.8 million issue for San Luis Coastal, and it will be very painful for many other districts who already have been shorted 23% to 28% of their state-allocated revenue limits as it is. The other interesting issue is the state has failed to monitor its own expenditures and has overspent its budget by $1.7 billion in the first 4 months of the year. And so you add to that the revenue forecast shortfall and the overspending, and you've got a it's a double death spiral in terms of the outcome for everybody else. An interesting news development today in the county of Orange. They have decided that the local property taxes, which reside in the county treasury at the moment before they're passed to the state of California, they've co-opted them. They've taken the property taxes and they're refusing to send them to the state. And the feeling is that that money now, the state will have to backfill the educational revenues, because as you remember, there's two components to a revenue limit. There's the local property tax component and then the backfill from the state of California. So it'll be an interesting case to follow and see what the outcomes are. Gets better all the time, huh, guys?
Yeah, I have a question. I think I may have misunderstood what I read in the Tribune last week. I thought I understood that if the shortfall was less than $2 billion, there would be cuts, but the cuts would be to higher education.
Correct.
If the shortfall was $2 billion or more, then K-12 would be affected.
Correct.
Did I understand it correctly?
Yes. And what you're seeing is they're already at $1.3 billion shortfall, that they're averaging, you know, somewhere between $500 million and $800 million a month of shortfalls. The trigger is measured in December, so the outcome is likely to be greater than $2 billion shortfall, which then triggers local education, K-12 education cuts.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for that cheery news, and I'm thinking that in order to backfill the potential loss of funds, that some of the state agencies that we depend on for services to kids are going to be hurt even more. And I'm thinking of, for example, regional centers and things like that, Medi-Cal, I'm assuming. And so I think the state and the kids are going to feel this one way or the other.
The implications are tremendous in terms of state-funded programs of one type or another, whether it's correctional or whether it's mental health or whatever. I think that the important part and two issues about this that concern me is, one is, what is the final adjudication to their right to do this? Okay, because if the county has that right to take the property taxes designated for the state, my question that I couldn't answer today was, did they also take the property taxes of basic aid districts that reside in Orange County? So that property tax component generally includes basic aid districts. So I don't know what that $73 million, what part of that might have been for Newport or Laguna or one of the basic aid districts in Orange County.
Well, that's called burying the lead. Thank you very much.
Can I follow up on that?
Mr. Millar.
So let's say the action by Orange County stands. Would that end up, if some of the monies were withheld from basic aid districts, that they would revert to revenue limits?
Correct. It's interesting because they would revert to revenue limit without an act of the legislature. It would be an administrative act of a county which forces them into a lower revenue status. And that wasn't ever anticipated. That's never been a storyline that anybody has talked about in the past.
Mrs. Roger.
Mr. Miller, could you refresh me on, I believe our revenue limit was established in the 60s?
Yes, the entire revenue limit system for the state of California was established in the 60s based upon the current level of property taxes, and there was a measurement of property taxes and some sort of a business model that they followed. And in the 60s, I think where you're going with this is San Luis Obispo County was a much differently populated the customs and characters of the county were very much rural at that time. So what we have as a school district is what they consider to be a very low revenue limit.
Which has never been adjusted.
It actually has, in the sense that each year there's a COLA that goes into it, as there are for all districts. But there's never been an equalization of our revenue limit to, let us say, San Jose or Orange County or anybody else.
Or Santa Clara or other counties, which have changed dramatically.
So it's only floated at the same level as everybody else's revenue limit. So we still remain in the measurement of all school districts in the state at a very low funded level.
So not to put you on the freckle, so just kind of off a horseback guess, what is our current revenue limit and what is our current per pupil expenditure based on our basic aid status?
If we don't consider the deficit factor, which is about 23% to 28% of your revenue limit, we should be getting about $6,330 per student, $6,330 per student. With a deficit factor, I'm not sure about this, but somewhere around $5,200. So that would be our funding level if we were getting revenue limit in today's world.
$5,200.
We're going to just, you know, be a walk in the park for whoever did this. There's going to be some arguments and some issues.
Okay, on that happy note, Mrs. Holmes.
The board has expressed some interest for some time in exploring a way to reduce the mounds of paper that you see in front of all of you at these board meetings and streamline this process. So we implemented a way to investigate that, and three of you, Mr. Buckman, Mr. Questenberry, and Mrs. Roger, agreed to serve as your representatives on a subcommittee, along with myself and Amelia Samoz from technology and a network technician, Joe Miller. So the six of us have met and came up with a framework for some of the features that we felt were most desirable in a product that we would begin to explore, and looked for products that might meet what is called an automated agenda system. Right now we operate in pretty much, for the user at a board meeting and for the audience, in a paper-filled world, but we do have kind of a hybrid system because we do translate this paper into an Adobe PDF document that we post on our web page, and we notify people that it's there. So theoretically, one could say that we could stop doing this and you could all work with that system. But the tools of a true automated agenda from the companies that prepare this software give you a lot of features that a straight PDF file do not do, that let you manipulate the document, to take notes as a board member and keep track of it, cross-reference information, and access resources that apply to various documents when you need to look up a board policy and things, and they're built to do those. So we're all familiar as members of the California School Boards Association that company has a product that Mr. Unger and Mr. Buckman are familiar with in their roles as delegates who use that. We looked at that initially, and we explored ways to find other companies who also make those products, and we found four that we've looked at so far. Those include the CSBA product and a company called Board Docs, another called Electronic Board Agenda, and another called Novus Agenda. So we've had demonstrations from all of those, and kind of had an interesting perspective on that because of the subcommittee. So we have a broad range of technology levels from the board on the subcommittee, and a completely different interest from our technology representatives about how we would manage this tool and what its impact would be on the district resources and how secure it might be. So Joe's really keeping a good handle on those sorts of things. The products were very different from each other. So the subcommittee is not sort of glued into one of those things. We will all be attending the California School Boards Conference in a couple of weeks. And so we agreed that one thing we wanted to do was wait until the conference to go through that vendor show when we're there and see if there might be additional companies that we haven't been able to suss out who might have products we could look at and decide if there are other demonstrations we want to see before we make a recommendation on how to proceed further. Additionally, one of the things that is necessary for the board members to utilize a tool like this is a piece of technology. So rather than those piles of paperwork that you'd all be using, you'd have something perhaps like Mr. Miller has in front of him, a small computer. You could have a regular computer, but we've all sort of agreed that, a big wall of something would be sort of disruptive to your connection with the audience. But that's something the board also was very interested in finding a tool that lets you operate a system like that and still stay connected to your colleagues at the table and the audience that you're talking to. So that's another thing that we'd like to be looking at when we go to the vendor conference. Some of you have experience in a lot of different platforms. So when we come back from the conference, and we'll have a board meeting that Tuesday on the 6th, probably sometime in the meantime, the subcommittee might talk to each other and kind of talk about what we've seen so far. We'd like to come to you again that night with a more fleshed out report and a recommendation on how we think we might want to proceed. We've asked the companies who've demonstrated to us so far to send us quotations, but they caution us that those are not fully reliable. They're not a hard price quote that says you do this, because the product they offer us is going to have a lot to do with the parameters that we specify. So after we can make a little further decision on what we want this all to look like, we'll be able to get a specific plan. We might want to issue an RFP, but we'll kind of make those decisions as we get farther down the road. But we just wanted you to see the document preparation. So rather than departments preparing things on paper and sending those to me, they're all done online, and then we just sort of shuffle them around like a deck of cards to put the items in the order we want to go and press a button, and it's published. It's done.
I have to support Kim, and I also want to thank her and Amelia for all the work they've done. But Walt, I was a tremendous fan of just going with the PDF on the iPad, and my eyes have been opened. What's being offered out there will revolutionize the way we deal with our actually sitting here and being able to function as a board. And also free the office up from a tremendous amount of work, so that its cost savings will have value added to it. And I got to tell you, my vision on this is totally different than it was going in.
And I'll just concur with Mr. Buckman. I think it's going to make a big difference once we go to this.
Okay. I think Mrs. Shields.
Good evening, everybody.
I think I'm connected here.
Okay. Can you hear me? I don't think you can. All right, I think we're ready. We've got more than one mic working here.
Would you like to get lights? Come on, I think it's a new
I think I'll begin now. Well, here we go. Welcome.
Thank you for letting me come tonight to talk to you about Initiative 3, Developing Preschools and Transitional Kindergarten Programs. It's my pleasure to be here and provide this update for you. Tonight, I will be sharing with you a brief review of research related to the benefits of high-quality early learning opportunities, as well as an update on our preschool planning and transitional kindergarten program, and then finish up with next steps in the development of both of our programs. I want to begin tonight by thanking you from a real TK family for your approval of Initiative 3, which may prove to be the most powerful preventive intervention strategy we give to the students and families of San Luis Coastal's youngest learners. Let's begin with a quick but significant review of what the research tells us about the benefits of high-quality early learning opportunities for students from socioeconomically disadvantaged families. We'll start with research from the Chicago Child Parent Center. According to a longitudinal study of nearly 1,000 low-income children living in Chicago, attending Chicago Public Schools preschool programs compared to a control group who did not receive preschool services, children who attended high-quality preschool did significantly better in kindergarten through 12th grade. In fact, they scored higher on reading and math achievement tests from the primary grades through high school. They were less likely to be placed in special education. They were less likely to be held back a grade in school, and they were more likely to graduate from high school and go on to college. It's also worth noting that the study also found that even though some students are able to pick up enough of the academic skills in the early grades to catch up with their peers without receiving intensive, high-quality preschools, they can't always compensate for what I like to call the intangibles. Those things like better self-regulation, delayed gratification, the ability to concentrate, motivation, a love of learning. High-quality preschool makes the difference. Let's move on to one of the most famous stories that studies, the Perry Preschool Study, which came out of Michigan. This followed participants for more than 40 years. Compared to the control group who did not attend preschool, Perry participants were once again more likely to go on to college, less likely to be arrested, more likely to own a home, and more likely to be employed. Both of these studies remind us that poverty does not have to mean failure. Poverty does not limit a child's IQ. If we turn our attention for a minute to the brain research, the findings from the Center on the Developing Child at Harvard University demonstrate the importance of what happens when children's brains are young. In early childhood, children develop the linguistic, cognitive, social, and emotional building blocks for later development. If you look closely, here's year one of their life. If we go on here, kind of looking at those preschool years, we have a window of opportunity in that preschool age to dramatic California. Many children in poverty are still not able to access them. According to the RAND study, California's underfunded public preschool programs serve only 40% of eligible 3- and 4-year-olds. Only 13% of low-income children are enrolled in high-quality early learning programs that promote school readiness and later school achievement. Without the strong start that high-quality early learning provides, children may not develop the skills they need to read proficiently in third grade. This critical milestone predicts, as we know, whether a student will graduate from high school. The RAND study also gives us some disheartening data regarding the success rates of elementary children. Currently, between 40 and 60% of California's third graders are not achieving grade-level proficiency in reading and math. There's even a larger gap for some groups, including Latinos, children of parents without post-secondary education, English learners, and low-income families. Unfortunately, those same groups who are behind in third grade are behind when they entered kindergarten. So what about San Luis Coastal Unified School District? We did some research, and it's very clear to us that we do have children from low-income families who are not accessing preschools. We also have children arriving in kindergarten with a learning gap.
And we have parents whose first contact with our school system is to find out that their child is behind. So what are we doing about it? You've taken on Initiative 3. We're looking at high-quality early learning programs. So what does that look like? We believe in San Luis Coastal it will be a success for all preschools. When you walk into one of our high-quality preschool classrooms, you will immediately see learning occurring. A high-quality program has a sense of purpose, organization, and excitement. In San Luis Coastal, we are creating a systematic approach to ensure the greatest potential for success for all of our students. We bring it down to three elements that are critical to providing the kind of preschool that will produce the best results for children: people, place, and program. Our people, our teachers, and our families. Starting with our teachers, we've hired awesome teachers who I'll introduce in just a minute, who are fully credentialed and have specialized training in early childhood education. They will receive ongoing professional development and opportunities for collaborative practice. They reflect the cultural and linguistic diversity of the children and families we'll be serving, and our teachers will also work as intervention specialists, providing small group instruction for older students at the school site. Our families. We have a great opportunity to break down cultural barriers with our families by reaching out and connecting with them as their first introduction to our district. We will build trusting relationships with these families and support their home language as well as at-home teaching efforts. We're going to connect our families by engaging them in our program through daily communication with the teacher, opportunities to assist in the classroom, and participation in school activities. Our parent education will be a strong component of our preschool program, with the information shared on nutrition, parenting, and developmental milestones of our young learners. In fact, we are meeting tomorrow with Sally Ames to do some of that planning. She's been a great guide for us, both with our preschools and our TK programs. Our classrooms. Location, location, location. We've strategically chosen elementary school sites for our classrooms to best meet the geographical needs of our families. Each classroom has a ratio of one adult for every 9 children, with at least one teacher and one assistant teacher. Because we're going to be licensed, we have to follow all those licensing rules, and so we will be able to have 18 students in a classroom with 2 adults. Our Success for All school environment will welcome children of all cultural, ethnic, and linguistic backgrounds in an inclusive setting designed to meet individual needs. Our classrooms will have the supplies, materials, and equipment that support their learning. These teachers have been very pushy about getting just the right things for their classrooms. Our program, curriculum and instruction. Based on the California Preschool Learning Foundations, which includes goals specific to preschool that are research-based, developmentally appropriate, and aligned with our current state K-12 standards. Our program will provide learning activities based on each child's interest and natural curiosity, as well as daily integrated activities across children's cognitive, physical, social, and emotional development. Will support the needs of our English learners and all children in developing their home language as well as English. In addition, we're going to provide a proactive approach to comprehensive care. We'll include vision, hearing, dental, and general health screening to identify children's special needs as part of our program. Our children will be offered a daily healthy snack, parenting classes with free childcare in areas such as Latino family literacy and active parenting for your 1 through 4 year old. Our first 2 sites to be opening in January will be Pacheco and Hawthorne. And at this time, I'd like to introduce our preschool teachers. We have Monica Garcia, we have Rita Delkiskamp, and we have Courtney Morgan. And at this time, I'd like to call Monica up, and she's going to share with you just a little bit about our outreach to our families so far.
Good evening to everyone. My name is Monica Garcia, and I'm the preschool teacher at Pacheco.
Did I correct myself? We knew that was going to happen.
Rita Rodriguez, please. Well, I've been practicing all day. Rita, welcome. No, you don't have to.
Thank you. Well, what we've been doing since our beginning of this program, we've been working collaboratively together as a team, and we've created a brand new student-friendly, family-friendly flyer that we've started putting out into the community. We've been working with different agencies, and we have been going to places where families might frequent that we would like to target with our preschool. So we, both schools have received about 8 to 10 applications at this point, but our outreach into the community has just started, so we're hoping that it will increase and the word is going to get out. So that's what we've been doing at Pacheco. We've also put it in our newsletter, and we will be talking at the DLAC meeting and the ELAC meetings for our sites. So is there any questions? Or thank you very much.
Thank you, Monica. Okay, let's see if I can get it right from here on out. Our next steps for our preschools, we'll be opening up Hawthorne and Pacheco in January with Monarch Grove and Baywood. We're developing a collaborative partnership in Los Osos with our County Office of Education, who already coordinate the state preschool programs in Los Osos. At Del Mar, we're developing as well a collaborative partnership with the state preschool that already is on site, and we are planning on opening a third preschool at C.L. Smith in August of 2012. As far as our preschools, we believe that when our children feel safe and connected to the school, they'll be able to learn with confidence and become capable learners who are successful before a learning gap ever has a chance to develop. And we believe our success for all preschools will provide that caring environment for our underserved students so that we can honestly say all means all. At this time, I'd like to move on to our transitional kindergarten. Transitional kindergarten, as you know, is the result of the new law, the Kindergarten Readiness Act of 2010, which changed the required birth date for admission to kindergarten and to first grade as well. It requires districts in California to create TK classes to begin in 2012-2013. It's a three-year rollout, and we've got four sets of years up here, with our 2011-12 year being first. So TK is not actually in effect this year, but then starting next fall, then 2012, those November 2nd to December 2nd kids will no longer be eligible for traditional kindergarten and will be required, if they enroll in our schools, to attend transitional kindergarten. A year later, it'll be that October group, and then 3 years from now, it'll be all the September 2nd through December 1st kiddos will be eligible for transitional kindergarten and not traditional kindergarten. Okay? So, what is transitional kindergarten? I've explained it so many times this year, I am starting to feel like an expert. It's the first year of a two-year program. That's most important to say because it creates confusion. If you do one, do you do the other? Transitional kindergarten is all about doing a first year to then be ready and successful to move on to a traditional kindergarten program. It's a modified program that is age and developmentally appropriate for our young kinders. And it's really a bridge between that more flexible environment of preschool and the much more structured academic setting of kindergarten. Our goal in our initiatives for 2011-12 was to open two TK classrooms as optional programs for our youngest kindergarten students. We invited students to participate who turned 5 between September and December, as it was an optional program. For our pilot year, it's voluntary, and parents could opt either for the TK or a traditional classroom. In order to get this happening, we got right to work. Our steps included selecting the school sites. We have one on the coast and one in town. We hired two incredible teachers that you'll be meeting in just a minute. We found the already enrolled kindergarten students. When I came on board, I believe about July 1st, all of our kindergartners, for the most part, had already enrolled.
And six subsequently.
Making the decision to put Jason in transitional kindergarten this year was a very easy decision based on his birth date and just by the developmental skills that I've noticed with him. I noticed that putting him in the transitional K will give him an advantage to be more successful in his entire education, not only in kindergarten and first grade, but also through middle school and high school.
My name is Carrie Olcott. My son is Logan. We chose TK because he's a September birthday and wasn't quite ready for kindergarten, but needed a little bit more than preschool.
And then when we saw the traditional, the TK program
advertised in the newspaper, I thought, oh my gosh, this may be the best of both worlds. And my other son, my older son, actually goes to Monarch, so came to the meeting, and it ended up being a perfect fit.
So with that, our summer planning began. The two teachers and I met, developed the curriculum, and I believe you have a packet, our curriculum overview. We looked at a variety of instructional supplies and order items to fill those classrooms with hands-on, developmentally appropriate learning materials. We looked at a variety of assessment models and developed ongoing assessments as for what we wanted students to know and be able to do, as well as a TK report card. The teachers also each worked very closely with their two school sites to develop daily schedules that matched the already existing schedules at the school and TK information packets. They hosted welcome activities for the students before school started and jumped right in. Our TK program, we have fully credentialed teachers with experience working with young children. We've capped our classes to 20 students with an aide in each classroom, and for those of you who've had the opportunity to visit, we have two very active, happy classrooms. Our instructional day is the same length as a typical kindergarten class, which is the requirement. Our students will return to the school of residence at the end of their TK year to move on to the traditional kindergarten class. Our TK curriculum consists of five components plus a parent engagement piece. At this time, I'd like to introduce our two TK teachers, Patricia Nolan, who's at Los Ranchos, and Sunshine Frawley, who's at Monarch Grove, to share with you a little bit more about our curriculum. You're good. Yep. You good?
Hi. I'm Patricia Nolan. I'm at the TK program at Los Ranchos. Here you see an example of self-regulation. To be able to sit and be patient and wait your turn and raise your hand takes a lot of practice. And so we get that on a daily basis.
So we should have had that for the Congress, is that right?
Yeah. So. And here you see an example of self-care, learning to take care of your own needs. It builds confidence, self-confidence, and self-esteem. And they're getting pretty good at it. And social competence. Here you see kids working together. We do a lot of cooperative play and play or work, whatever you want to call it. And in order to cooperate, you have to negotiate and you have to compromise. All those things are the building blocks to building great relationships. And motor skills, besides the obvious physical exercise that you're getting, which is great and helps reduce obesity, you also get the added benefit of developing coordination and equilibrium. And there's a really great thing that happens in the brain. It releases a neurotransmitter when you do exercise, especially large motor skills, which is riding bikes, running, climbing, jumping, all that kind of stuff. And that neurotransmitter helps calm and ground kids so that they can learn. So.
Hi, I'm Sunshine Frawley, Monarch Grove. Our TK program is great for their vocabulary and language development. We do obviously read a lot of books and sing a lot of songs and learn nursery rhymes, and they do their sharing and get to speak in full sentences in front of the group and answer questions, and you know, it's really good for that. We have English learners that are native Spanish speakers as well as from a lot of other language backgrounds, and they're benefiting from all those activities. Pre-reading is a huge component of our program. We do all the reading and the songs and the rhymes, and then we're also teaching them their sounds and doing a lot of phonemic awareness activities. I'll have, for example, pictures of animals and say, I'm looking at a picture, try and guess what it is. It's a tiger. You know, and it's surprising, like, considering all those things that go pre-math skills. Science, through hands-on activities and nonfiction literature. They're so excited. There's all the hands-on stuff that we can bring into the classroom, all that bringing nature inside and learning about animals and learning about color mixing and all the just super fun hands-on stuff. That's their magnets and their color mixing. Our study of culture is based mainly on the cultures that they're experiencing in their own lives and the lives of their classmates. We've been talking a lot about things they're grateful for, and it's heartwarming to hear about all the things that they're grateful for. I told them, it's Thanksgiving, and so, you know, people talk about what they're thankful for around Thanksgiving. And I said, you know what? Some people think about that every day of the year. And so we talked about that, you know, it makes you a happy person to think about what you're thankful for every day of the year instead of think about what you're not grateful for.
Thank you both. We thought we would take you, because we know you're super busy, on a virtual field trip very quickly into our TK classrooms.
And Bubba Bear goes, buh, buh, buh. What does Katrina Cat do? Needless to say, turning 5 is a really big deal in TK. There's a lot of birthdays, right, one after another. Finally, I think it's very, very important to say that a big piece of our program is to build capable and confident learners, whether it be our preschool programs or our TK programs, ready to enter those kindergarten classrooms and be successful students. Very quickly, our parent engagement component for our transitional kindergarten program is very strong due to the expertise of our two teachers and their commitment. They have newsletters with embedded parent education that go home weekly. They have a monthly parent education opportunity that's either hosted or taught by one of the teachers. They encourage and have a number of parent volunteers, as you heard earlier. They are involved this week in parent conferences, so we're going to get them out of here very soon.
But I thought you might also want to hear how our parents are getting involved.
I volunteer in the kids' classroom. I signed up to volunteer. I helped out the Halloween class party, which was super exciting. I've done the walk-a-thon and Teacher Patricia's program.
Our next steps with TK are making our plans for next year as we add those November children on. For the 2012-13 year, we will be adding a third class at C.L. Smith based on our projected numbers. We'll enroll all those November students, and then we'll fill in the classes with September-October kids based on an application and see how many we can fill those up. For the year after that, we'll accept all the October to December kiddos, and then we'll have full implementation by 14-15. In conclusion, I believe that all 10 of our initiatives are critical. I think they're wonderful at providing programs that are based on rigor, relevance, and relationships. But I do think Initiative 3, providing high-quality preschools for our underserved students and transitional kindergartens for our youngest learners, is monumental, and if we're able to sustain it, will be the most powerful intervention we offer to ensure success for all. So I have one last little goodbye from our children. And I must tell you, that was Lily, and she's at Monarch Grove, and she is the one girl in a class.
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
I just wanted to thank Patricia for welcoming me to her classroom of transitional kindergartners at Los Ranchos. And I learned from Patricia that something that was new to me in any case, which she calls zoophonics, which is that rather than learning the alphabet by rote memory and memorization, the children have an alphabet that's made up of animals from the zoo. And so B is not B, it's B. And the children learn the sound and the visual as well as a kinesthetic aspect to it, which is that they give you the shape of the bear. So he was brought over to show me a few of the letters of the alphabet, which for a four-year-old, it's huge to be able to sound something out and make it work for them and understand the language, which was absolutely adorable. But equally important was the problem-solving that went on in her classroom of the children that came back repeatedly to her with somebody has a problem, somebody's not getting along, somebody's taking this, and they were sent back each time with some advice about how to resolve that problem, conflict resolution. So much was going on so early in these children's lives. And then I had the opportunity also to visit Sunshine out at Monarch Grove and inaugurate their new playground equipment with all of her 14 boys and one girl, which is quite a scene. And there, too, the play that is the work of childhood was so important. I have two fall birthday boys myself and chose transitional kindergarten for each of them for exactly this reason. Those 4 months in a four-year-old's life are huge, especially for boys sometimes who have more difficulty with their fine motor skills. And the competence that it must give those children in starting kindergarten
at the same place that the other kindergartners are is a very important advantage that we're giving to them. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing.
Mr. Quisenberry and then Mr. Buckland.
I hadn't turned off my light, sorry. But anyway, I want to compliment you on the start of this. I think it's wonderful, and I know from my own children how much they benefited from the preschool experience that they had.
Mark?
Thank you, Concern.
First of all, I think the link to YouTube would be tremendous, and probably that would go viral in about 20 seconds. But I'm also very excited that we're having this opportunity to offer these children such a great chance for success. But from my personal,
I think it's tremendous. What I wrote down here was one little snippet. I wrote less than 40% of eligible low socioeconomic students attend preschool. And I'm wondering how are we reaching out to our eligible parents? Are we doing it in Spanish and English, and are we doing it through churches? Are we doing it where people meet and congregate? How are we trying to get the word out so that we can grab those youngsters?
I'm happy to answer that question. They're being very proactive. Two of our teachers are bilingual, and they are out in the streets. They are at the laundromats. They're at the local health centers. They're at the places where you get the WIC, the Women and Infants and Children. Monica, you may have to name a few. They're out and finding parents.
HC Clinic, local churches, Catholic Charities, laundromats, thrift stores, local Zacharia restaurants, small businesses where they might frequent. So that's where we're trying. And then also working with other agencies in collaboration. Working with CAPSO if they have any referrals. Working with just different agencies within our community to find the families, but we will find them. And I'm making phone calls. So calling parents who have expressed interest, following up, making that initial phone call, making follow-up phone calls, third phone calls, just trying to spread the word. I attended the ELAC meeting just a few weeks ago, was able to speak with the families in Spanish, so I'm still making those relationships there at Auckland campus.
Great. It is great to hear that you're pursuing all those avenues, because that's where lots of our eligible parents and students are to be found. And I think this is great. I think it's really tremendous. This will give students an opportunity that will change their lives. Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Shields, and gosh, great presentation, and thanks to all of you, and very exciting that you're piloting these programs that are really going to benefit kids. So to all of you, thanks very much. Let's move on to item number one, approval to pay board member salary for permissible absence. Dr. Prater.
He's going to let me handle this one. This is a fairly routine item, but we place it on the discussion agenda so that the board member who is having an absence be excused can abstain from the vote. The law gives very specific exemptions when you may allow a board member to be paid when they've missed a meeting. Otherwise, we must dock those pay. And Mr. Quisenberry, unfortunately, was very ill at last week's expulsion hearing, and we're glad to see that he's well now, but this item gives him an exemption based on that illness.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any board discussion? Seeing none, I'd take a motion.
Is my light on?
Your light is on.
I'll move approval of item one.
Okay, we have a motion to approve item one.
I'll second.
We have a second. Any further board discussion? Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, abstain, and one abstention, so it carries 6-0 with one abstention. Move on to item number two, proposed revisions to board policy 4020, all personnel alcohol and drug-free workplace, second reading. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so we presented this to the board at our last board meeting, and based on some consideration from board members, Mr. Quisenberry, on the page B, as you'll see, we decided to strike out the second termination, which was unnecessary in the sentence. And then Mr. Buckman had asked about the fact that in page A, where it says, as defined in the Controlled Substance Act Code of Federal Regulations, if we needed to have something that addressed state law as well. So I spoke with our attorney, and he actually thought that it would be a good idea, as Mr. Buckman had pointed out, to go ahead and strike out the sentence that's, or just the part that says Controlled Substance Act and Code of Federal Regulations, and simply state as defined in state and federal law. And so that's what we presented in front of you today, and would look for approval.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'm bringing it back to the board. Is there any discussion from board members? Mr. Buckman?
No.
Okay. Is there anybody that would like to make a motion then?
I would like to make a motion.
Aha, we have a motion. Is there someone who would like to make a second? It's been the motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mr. Quisenberry. Again, any...
with regard to guidelines for surveys and guidelines for any type of invasive health examinations. And, of course, our regulations would have that no invasive health examinations would take place. And that we have proper notification to parents on all these things. So with that, it's just a second reading and available for any questions.
First of all, is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any discussion from board members? Mrs. Roger.
Yeah, I just missed the previous discussion on this. I imagine that it was probably brought up, but I wanted to be certain that when parents receive their packet at the beginning of school, that it is made very clear and apparent to them that they have the right to refuse that their child's name be given to military recruiters if they want to elect that, and that they sign and return that information as part of the required documents that are to be returned to the school prior to the start of the school year.
That is part of the student record card. That parents can check that box, and that is part of the sale and marketing, if you will, of student information. So if a parent checks the box, they are not to be contacted by military recruiters.
Okay, and also, do we have something on there about please do not contact my high school senior to offer them a Visa card?
I don't think we're selling that information or giving that information to companies, but lots of wily people out there.
It's an opt-out, so if you don't opt out, your child's information is going to be given
fair
to
game, military. And that is by decree, by a federal decree that was, it's probably about 7 years ago.
Any other comments from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. Would someone like to make a motion on this item?
I move approval of the new board policy, 5022, students and students and family privacy rights.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Mr. Quisenberry and seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. Any further discussion? Seeing none, bring it to a vote. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 4, approval of Morro Bay High School Single Plan for Student Achievement 2011-2012. Mrs. Dalkis-Camp.
You know, my father used to say, cada cabeza es un mundo. Every mind is a world of its own. And anyone who values diversity recognizes that there are benefits to considering different perspectives. Morro Bay High School's Single Plan for Student Achievement takes a different approach. It's organized by WASC goals and yet clearly aligns to our district strategic plan initiatives. And this evening, Dan Andrus is here with us, and he'd like to share one of the highlights from his plan.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight. I'm going to share something that I believe our student rep, Haley Ramos, already shared with you because she's so excited about it. As part of our single plan for student achievement, we have started this year a learning center at Morro Bay High School. The learning center is a place where students come in and they can receive academic help very quickly and during their school day in the core subjects and foreign languages, which is where students generally struggle. Oh, my clicker's right here. Good. All right. And one of these buttons. Not the right arrow, however. All right. Can I just click that for me? Thank you. So Rick DeFore, in his mention and his discussion of the RTI model and interventions, says there are three things that you need for interventions to work for students. They need to be timely. We need to get out of our old practice of waiting till they fail a semester and then saying, oh, we probably should have helped you. Now we'll help you now that you have failed. They need to be targeted. They need to be very specific to the problem that that individual student is having. And they need to happen during the school day. So many of our students have busy things happening in their lives. They have parents who need to pick them up early or who can't bring them early to school. So they need to happen during the school day. Our learning center is set up so that if a student, for instance, fails an algebra test on Monday, we can have them in the learning center Tuesday receiving individual tutoring or small group tutoring on the specific parts of that test that they didn't understand. And by week's end, we can have them prepared to go back in and retest and demonstrate that they've now learned that model. Happens within the school day, right away, specific to their needs. We didn't want a learning center to be a place where students could just hang out. So students aren't allowed to just show up at the learning center and say, hey, tutor me, because I didn't want to be in class this period. Students are referred to the learning center by their teachers, their school counselor, and administrator. Somebody who is Academy, which is a free online program, so that they can come in and do online work. Sometimes they need to hear concepts explained a different way. They need to be able to pause it, go back, repeat it a couple of times, and the Khan Academy is a great avenue for them to do that. What we've seen so far is the students who come to our learning center and then retest are increasing their grades. They're learning the things that they didn't learn the first time around. We have fewer students with Fs, and we have students with fewer Fs. It's two different pieces of data. So we believe academically the learning center is doing what we designed it to do. We're going to continue to monitor that. There's another aspect of the learning center that I think Haley Ramos shared with you. Most of our tutors are upperclassmen who have been successful in the high school, who are in their junior or senior year. Most of them are seniors. They're keyed in to go into college. They're excited about what comes next for them. If they're a TA, a teacher's assistant during the day, we've said, go help that teacher for about half the period and then come to the learning center and work with your lower classmen, help other students. They have enjoyed that so much that about half of the students who come to tutor in the learning center are not there during class. They're there during their free period. They said, we want to help so much, we just want to come in. Haley's one of those. She comes in every day on her free period instead of going out, instead of going to home to do her own homework, or she comes in to help other students. So what we found is that not only are we taking students who have struggled academically and helping them academically, but these are also students who generally don't see themselves as academic type kids. And now they're hanging out in the learning center for part of their day with college-bound seniors who are talking about college and what it takes to be successful and happy in high school. Often they're students who struggle socially. And now they're making friends and being mentored by an upperclassman. And then they come out of the learning center, those upperclassmen are watching them at lunch and at nutrition and including them into their group. It's not an unintended consequence. It's an intentional consequence. We expected it to happen when we put the right upperclassmen into that learning center. And what's happening is not only are we increasing the academic success of our students, but we're also achieving that culture of care that we talk about so much in a way that's much more powerful than if we had tried to put adults in there to do the same work. So we're very pleased. The success we've seen in the first few months has been very rewarding to us. I want to congratulate two people who've really done the bulk of the work putting this together. One is Kathy Bueller, who manages and runs the Learning Center. And the other is James Bueno, our Learning Center coordinator, who just has an incredible rapport with kids. And as he walks around campus, kids come to him and say, how come you didn't ask me to help? I want to help. And he's just a magnet for the right kind of kids that we want to come in and help. We appreciate the support of the district and be able to finance this and start this program.
Thank you. Mrs. Roger.
Hi, Mr. Anders. I just had two questions on the and this is a wonderful concept, and you're right, Haley was pretty excited about it when she told us. Under who, how students are referred, is there a parent referral option?
Parents can refer. What generally happens, and our ELAC meeting was a good example of this. As I presented this idea to parents in our ELAC meeting, we gave them all 3x5 cards. We said, now, just write down any comments you have. And what I got back from almost all of the parents was, can my son use the Learning Center? Can my daughter use the Learning Center? And so I took those cards straight to Mr. Bueno, who's bilingual. He started calling in kids and calling parents back also and saying, hey, just want to let you know your son or daughter's in the Learning Center. They seem to be doing really well. Ask them how it went when you got home.
Great. That's wonderful. And then my second question was, I understand how the tutors are doing this in their free period, but since it's a pullout for the tutored students, what are we pulling them out of, and how is that determination made?
That was a concern. That was a big concern on the part of the teachers when we rolled this out to teachers, is, are you going to take kids who are struggling out of my class? And so what we've done is talk to teachers and say, as you structure your class this week, is there time in your class when students are working independently, when they're working in maybe groups on their homework there? And we go and we look at electives and things like that. Now, we promise teachers we're not going to pull all these kids out of PE every time we want to tutor them. We don't want to devalue any one program over the academic cores. So Mr. Bueno works very carefully with teachers to say, okay, you referred this student for algebra. At the end of algebra, when the kids are generally working on their homework, can I have them for 20 minutes to have them sit down one-on-one and come and get tutored? And so far, the teachers have been very open and very appreciative of the efforts we've made to pick them out at the right time of their day to have the least amount of negative impact on missing class time.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Some compelling reasons why we should provide this course for students. Among them are, this course was developed by CSU faculty in collaboration with secondary English teachers to prepare students for college English courses. Many times we hear about students having to take remedial courses in college, and this course is specifically targeted to help avoid that. Also, it's already been approved for A to G and specifically B English credit in other districts, so us being able to obtain that same approval is very likely. This new course is rigorous and relevant, and it aligns with Initiative 10 in supporting college readiness. And so this evening, staff requests your approval of this course as well as the three modified courses.
Dr. Isidroth Rogers and then Mr. Quisenberry.
I'm sorry, I didn't actually mean to, but I will say I am also glad to see that foreign language is being offered at Laguna Middle School as a course as opposed to just part of a wheel. I think that's very, and that is what this is, not part of the wheel.
No, it's a wheel, and it's been in existence. It's just that the curriculum was updated. A while back we brought you the Pacheco wheel, and so now what this does is align both of those curriculums a little more closely.
Thank you.
Before I go to you, Jim, I just want to see if there's anybody from the public that would like to address us on this item. And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Sorry.
Mrs. Delkiskamp, is this course in lieu of or in addition to English, 12th grade English?
The plan is to for students to be able to take it in lieu of their regular English 12 or AP class and receive English credit.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
How many sections, Rita, at Morro Bay?
You know, I don't know until we fly it and we see
okay.
How many students.
But it's 1,800 per from the restricted lottery funds. And is there a similar course at Slo High?
I think they will consider it. For now, it's going to begin at Morro Bay High School.
Okay.
Any other comments from board members? Okay, I'll bring it back for vote. Would someone like to make a motion on this?
I move the approval of the proposed new and modified secondary courses.
We have a motion. Do we have a second? Okay, I'll take Mrs. Sheffer. Second by Mrs. Sheffer. Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to the action discussion part of the agenda. We already did that. Item number 6, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Number 7, acceptance of donations. Number 8, disposition of surplus property. Number 9, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Number 10, approval of purchase orders. Number 11, disposal of Class 3 disposable records. Okay. Can I have a... First of all, is there anybody from the public that would like to address this item? Seeing no one, bring it back to the board. Do we have a motion on items 6, 7, 8, and 11?
I'll move approval of items 6, 7, 8, and 11.
We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Any further discussion from board members on those items? Bring it back for a vote. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Mr. Buckman, item number 9.
Yes. When I looked at item number 9, I was I had some questions for Mr. Miller regarding the what seemed to be a replacement of freezer, refrigerator, and I was concerned that we didn't have a sort of replacement cycle on this. And Mr. Miller's answer I found very interesting. Russell, if you could share what you told me, because it was amazing.
Yeah. What we went through very recently is an audit by the Department of Ed's Food Services Division, and they felt that we had accumulated too many funds in our account, and they were requiring us to either spend it down or refund it to the federal government as money in excess of need. And we like to look upon our food services funding as a very efficiently run operation, and we do a very good job in being able to match our food costs, labor costs, to the amount of revenue we get in. But given that they gave us a directive, either spend it or get rid of it, we've chosen to spend it. And what we do have, and Mr. Buckman's point is a good one in terms of a replacement cycle, but what we have, it's all green stuff.
So we're going to free the little squirrels and let them...
Yeah, and those trained hamsters, you know, yeah, that are rowing the boat, okay?
Okay, I'd like to make a motion to approve item number 9.
We have a motion. Do we have a second? We have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mrs. Sheffer, who is the second queen tonight, as she says. Any further discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Item number 10, Mr. Buckman again.
Yeah, quickly, on number item 10, as I was going through, I kind of looked at the top of 10-2, and then I looked at the bottom of 10-3, and noticed that there was this Rush Truck Center, and I was afraid that we were doing everything overnight, or we were leasing trucks. And again, Mr. Miller gave me a answer that was, I thought, fit in with our initiatives and fit in with what we were doing. So if you could share that with everybody else, I would appreciate it.
What we've really done here is we're faced with another mandate from the powers that be, and our diesel buses are required to filter the particulate matters as they part of their emissions. And so the expenditure of the money is to install the particulate filters on the buses, and there's also a piece of this that is a piece of equipment that once a week we take the filters off and we literally burn the particulate matters to ash by a treatment overnight so that all of the filters stay clean and run efficiently. This is an expenditure of money mandated by the Air Quality Management District, and it's a very expensive concern, but it is necessary in order to keep the buses on the road.
So with that, I'm sorry, please.
Mr. Quisenberry.
I want to give Mr. Miller an opportunity to dispel some ignorance on my part. I'm looking at this general fund and vendor names, and then under locations I see Billings, and I wondered what what that meant.
Under
on page 10.3,
yeah,
last column, location, Billings, is that?
Good question, but we also have golf. These are within the accounts payable department, so we have an account clerk that does billings back to PTA. This is what I'm imagining this is, and I believe it's true. It's a notation that we're billing back somebody for the reimbursement of this cost.
Okay, so it's not someplace in Montana.
I don't think so.
You know, okay.
If it All was, right. I'd go for an inspection tour.
All right. Thanks.
Mrs. Roger.
Well, since this, I had not planned to bring up this item, but since it was pulled and I started to look through it, I just wanted to make note that we have an expenditure under 21, the building fund, for welding services performed by a former student at Morro Bay High School who learned his welding skills or had a first exposure to welding under the ROP program at Morro Bay High School and has gone on to make it what I assume is a profitable trade for himself. And so I would commend Braden Hayner for moving forward with that. And with that said, and if there are no other comments, I'll move approval of this item.
Okay.
And I'd like to second... not Billings, Montana, but live here from San Luis Obispo. I'd like to make a second.
That's great. And, you know, and this is really kind of one of the, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. It's also one of those pay it forward things, you know. We gave to the student, and he took advantage of what we're doing, and now we're giving it back to him, and it's going back into the community, and that's just good stuff. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor of item number 10?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 13, advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to bring up any items for the advanced agenda? Mrs. Roger.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just neglected to turn off my mic.
Okay. And seeing none, I'll move then to item number 14, reports by board members. Is there any board? Mr. Buckman.
Just quickly, I was able to, I believe it was Friday, sit in on a small portion of the San Luis High School staff's discussion of their upcoming WASC. It was a tremendous amount of teamwork. There was a lot of energy in the air. I got there about a half hour before lunch, and when I attend those kind of workshops, I'm usually nodding out at that point. And the energy level in the room was still extremely high, so it was very rewarding.
Okay. Anybody else? Mr. Quisenberry, and then Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, and then Mrs. Quisenberry.
I too was able to attend the WASC meetings of the SLO High School faculty, and they were very well attended and very engaging. There was a lot of discussion and a lot of thought-provoking conversation going on there. And also, I was so curious after.
So it's at the community center. It's an open house from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. It relates to the schools because Colleen Wall and Gordon Snapp will bring their choirs to perform. And there's also an opportunity for people to purchase toys for children, donate toys through Toys for Tots. And so anyway, I would like people to be aware of that. Thank you very much.
Great. Anybody else? Mrs. Roger.
I just would thank Mr. Quisenberry for bringing that to our attention. I wonder if you might mention it again at the next board meeting, because I am notoriously absent-minded but would like to attend.
I'll be more than happy to do that.
Thank you.
Ms. Roger.
And first, I just wanted to draw everybody's attention to the BSFCS field excursions. And the one I'm just blown away by is they went to the Spanos Theater and they saw the bungee jumping cows. And I can only imagine. Wow. Thinking about the Morro Bay High School music boosters, just a reminder that it is time to buy your Christmas trees, your wreaths, and your poinsettias. So if you have, if you're going to be celebrating Christmas and you need a tree or you need a wreath to give to somebody, please contact the school and they'll put you in touch with a music booster who'll be happy to get you a tree. I know that we've bought our trees for years from them, and they are absolutely the most beautiful Christmas trees you can buy. I was fortunate enough last Thursday to have lunch at Laguna Middle School, and I got a chance to talk to several of the teachers, and I wanted to thank them for their hospitality and putting up with a board member coming over to the school. So thanks to the Laguna Middle School. And seeing that we have no other business, the board will adjourn this meeting, and we'll meet again next Tuesday evening. Thank you very much.